Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Last week, Dr. James Dobson mentioned on the radio that he mentioned the partial birth abortion debate and letters he had received from medical professionals defending the focus on the family position that the partial birth abortion ban is a victory. Of course, Colorado Right to Life and pro-life leaders like Alan Keyes and Judge Roy Moore have condemned the partial birth abortion ruling as immoral and ineffective, that it's not going to save any lives. In the last weeks, some of our listeners have called Focus on the Family and asked about the partial birth abortion ruling, and Focus has sent some callers copies of a letter written by a Colorado Springs doctor, Roy Stringfellow, who is a Christian and an OBGYN and a longtime pro-life advocate. Now, a second letter supporting Dr. Dobson's position is from an organization that Dr. Stringfellow holds office with, the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Today, what I'd like to do, I'd like to, well, welcome Dr. Stringfellow to Bob Enyart Live. How are you, Dr. Stringfellow?
I'm doing well. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. I would love it if it would be okay with you if we start out with a very brief audio clip of Dr. Dobson. Last week, he referred to these letters he's received, one from you. Now, he didn't mention you by name, but he referred to the letters. And so I'd like to start by playing that, because he also referenced indirectly our open letters we've published in newspapers around the country saying that the partial birth abortion ruling was a terrible setback to the pro-life movement. So is that okay? Can we start with that brief audio clip?
Certainly, that'd be fine.
Okay, let's go.
He is, without question, the most pro-life president that we have ever had. And I think that it's time that Christian people thank him for that. You know, he did sign the ban on partial birth abortion, and that was a good thing. I don't care what you're reading in the paper. That was a good thing. And I have letters that have come in from the medical community saying there are a lot of medical reasons that we should have banned partial birth abortion. But he did that, and so many other things related to the pro-life cause.
So we have two letters from Focus on the Family that they have sent out to us and to callers. And Dr. Roy Stringfellow, it is an honor to have you on the show. Your name is on both of the letters. On the one, you're the author of the letter. And on the other, you're on the masthead because you're an official with the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs. So could we start with you explaining to the audience, why do you believe there is a disagreement? You believe that this is a good ruling and that it will save lives. And we here at Bob Enyart Live believe the opposite, that it is a very bad ruling and that, in fact, it will not save lives. So could you explain to us why? You have extra insight because you're an OBGYN. So please explain to us.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And first, I'd like to say I think there are good people on both sides of this question. I think Dr. Dobson is one of the finest pro-life advocates that I've ever known. I mean, he's a remarkable man. And you and the other signers of the letter are also exceptionally good people who are extremely interested and committed to the pro-life movement. And what I would like to do would be just to shed a little light on this, because it's an incredibly complex bill and ruling. And I've taken the time to read the ruling. I've taken time to read the opinions by the justices. And I can see where you're coming from. I can see why you would think this might be a bad ruling. But from a medical standpoint, I think it really helps to understand, if you can have some understanding of the medical background. First of all, the ruling bans partial birth abortion, and that's a real plus. Now, your friends and you have felt that it really would not save a single baby because of the way the ruling is written. And in reality, I don't believe that's true. And we can talk about that in more detail.
Like to do, especially starting off with your insight as an OBGYN, why you think that late-term, especially late-term abortions, will now be prevented. It is interesting to note that Dr. Dobson has put in writing, he put in their monthly newsletter at Focus on the Family, that banning partial birth abortion does not save a single human life. And in fact, we had a meeting 2 years ago with his vice president of public policy, Tom Minery, and he admitted the same in a meeting with us and said he justified the effort, the 15-year effort, by saying, but it helps us keep the issue in the news. So we've got that in the context, in the mix. So you think that Dr. Dobson was wrong to concede to us?
Well, he thinks he was wrong. I spoke with him about that when I heard that you had made a comment on the program that he had reversed himself on that. And I asked him about that, and he said that he had reversed his opinion until he obtained medical insights. And see, that's one of the things about Dr. Dobson I like so much. So many things in life are very complex, and he has a group of physicians, it's about 30 or 40 physicians from across the country in Canada, that serve him on what we call the Physicians Resource Council. So when there are complex problems like this, he can fall back on asking us for medical input, and really helps to give clarity and understanding.
Sure. So you're saying that when he conceded, basically, the week after our open letter, that this does not save a single human life, and so that was a reversal of his first position.
Well, I think he reversed his opinion on the basis of what you had said, but then after he received input from the medical community and looked at the reality of it, then he realized that, well, it does save lives, and it saves lives by the thousands.
Okay, and since they have sent out to callers your letter from Dr. Roy Stringfellow from Colorado Springs and the letter from APLOG, American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, that your name is on the masthead, so obviously you were part of the medical counsel that he received cause him to reverse his position.
Yeah, that's correct.
So then could you share with us your understanding of why this does stop late-term abortions? And then I have four different statements I'd like to make that will present our argument that, in fact, late-term abortions are not reduced or hindered by this. But please
certainly
go ahead.
I'd be happy to. Partial birth abortion is a mechanism to extend the abortionist's control over the entire pregnancy. The equally hideous procedure, which is the method of dilating the cervix and pulling the baby out in pieces, and that's an equally hideous thing and has been utilized for quite some time. That is effective. That can be utilized up until almost halfway through pregnancy. Pregnancy is 40 weeks long, and you can utilize the dilation and evacuation procedure, which is that terrible thing where they pull the baby out in pieces, that can be utilized up to about 18 weeks or so. Some of the extremely radical abortionists will carry that to 20 or 22 weeks, perhaps a little further. But then from that point on, mechanically, they just simply can't do that, because to try that on a pregnancy that's further along, say one that's 26 weeks or 30 weeks, certainly into 34, 36 weeks, you just can't do it, because it would precipitate torrential hemorrhage and would very likely severely injure the mother or maybe cost the mother her life. So even an abortionist who doesn't mind tearing a baby out in pieces, it would ruin his day, as I said in the letter, if he had a mother that died in his abortion clinic.
That's right.
So for that reason,
yes,
they really don't have access to doing third trimester abortions, except with the partial birth abortion. Okay, and that's the partial birth abortion is an equally hideous type of a procedure where they essentially deliver the baby up to the head and then suction the brains, and it can deliver a baby all the way up to term. They can do that on a 9-month pregnancy. So that now has been removed from their armamentarium. And that will be very, very helpful to save babies, believe me.
And, Dr. Stringfellow, that is the same argument you put in the letter you wrote on July 26th. You addressed it to Brian Rohrbaugh, Colorado Right to Life, myself, Bob Enyart, Reverend Flip Benham, Reverend Tom Utner, Human Life International, Ms. Judy Brown, and Dr. Alan Keyes, by that time, who had become well known for condemning this ruling. So could we then, you're saying medically it is not actually possible for abortionists to do third trimester or especially late second trimester abortions without partial birth abortion.
That's right. The only other way is available to them are three ways. One is just to initiate labor. Well, they don't want to do that because then the baby's born alive. The other way is to do a hysterectomy with the baby inside. And most mothers are not willing to do that. And the third way would be to do a C-section and kill the baby before it's delivered. And so far, to the best of my knowledge, that is not a part of the average abortionist armamentarium.
All right. So could we proceed now with, I'd like to provide four observations that we make that suggest that that's an incorrect conclusion.
Okay.
Okay. To start with, we here in Denver, we have a strong pro-life activist community. And that means that for 20 years, our group is out on the streets 5 days a week at the abortion clinics.
That's good.
And this gives you something a little different than pro-life ministries that are not there, like CPCs, which are vital, and people trying to outlaw the killing of children at the legislature. Those things are vital. But we have a bit of a different take because we're right there. We see the women going into the clinics.
Right.
And late-term abortions occur in regional centers, like, for example, the Hope Clinic in St. Louis, the abortionist Martin Haskell in, I think, Kettering, Ohio, he's at, Carhartt in Nebraska, Warren Hearn here in Colorado, George Tiller in Wichita. So and we interact. It's a very close-knit subculture of pro-life street activists. And so after the ruling, the first question is, well, are the numbers of late-term abortions going down? Do they go down? And I'd like to report to you that as of April 2007, when this ruling passed, that these abortionists did not decrease the numbers of abortions, their customer base, the number of late-term abortions, the number of women showing, obviously pregnant, going into their clinics. That continued unabated. And I have a quote for you from Warren Hearn, who's a Colorado late-term abortionist.
Right, I know him.
And then I'd like to tell you about a phone call we placed. We have been calling abortion clinics for over 20 years. We set fake appointments, and we do that to get updated information on their killing techniques, their prices, and so on. So Warren Hearn wrote an article in Slate magazine. And he said this. He said, in my private practice, I perform many abortions as late as the 26th week of pregnancy and some as late as the 34th week. Now, his website advertises abortion into the 34th week. No, he wrote this. So he said, I begin by giving the fetus an injection that stops its heart immediately. And he puts in his article discussions he's had with recent customers, clients, and they ask, well, this partial birth abortion ban, is this going to prevent me from having an abortion? And he says, no, it doesn't affect our practice whatsoever. Well, in early August of this summer, months after the PBA ruling, we had a mother call and ask if the current ruling prevented late-term abortion because her daughter was more than 30 weeks and she wanted to bring her in for an abortion. And she was told, no, the new law does not affect their abortion practice whatsoever and that the cost would be approximately $30,000, which is consistent with what we see elsewhere. So that is my first argument, that as pro-life activists who are not sitting in an office theorizing about how this affects late-term abortions, but we are part of a network of pro-life Christians who are saving kids, just a small fraction, at the clinics as the moms are going in. When we make appointments with the late-term abortionist, we make appointments. There's no change. And we see the same number of women going in after the ruling. So that's my first argument that your conclusion was in error?
Okay, let me take a chance to answer that. First of all, I know Warren Hearns. I've debated him in the state legislature in trying to get a late trimester abortion bill passed here in Colorado, which unfortunately did not happen. Warren Hearns is a radical, on the fringe type of a guy. He does not do partial birth abortions.
No, and in fact, he says that he doesn't know.
So it wouldn't apply. You wouldn't expect it to apply to him. Okay?
Well, right, but Dr. Stringfellow, you argued that partial birth abortion, and you told this to Dr. Dobson, that that's the only technique available to abortionists for doing late-term abortions.
No, I didn't tell you that, and I just finished telling you that the other ways are to do an induction of labor, and another way is to do a hysterotomy, where you make just like a C-section.
Right.
And another way is to do a hysterectomy. So it won't change those things.
Well,
Warren
now
Hearn does some of those things, and what he does is he kills the baby first, and then initiates labor, and then the baby is born.
He initiates labor.
He does very few of those. That is a very small part of his practice. He advertises up to 34 weeks. He doesn't advertise beyond 34 weeks, and he rarely does those.
Well, of course, there are very few women in the market for killing their child in the last few weeks before they're to have a delivery, but that happens also. The front page in the Houston Chronicle ran an article just a couple weeks ago about a woman who was in her ninth month, or she was just about a month prior to delivery, and she was aborted with an injection that killed the fetus in her womb. And that actually seems to be a technique that was pioneered here in Colorado, and it's used around not only around the country, but around the world. This article was August 30th, 2007, an Associated Press article, and it speaks of this husband and wife, and she was, quote, about a month before her due date, and she was given an injection while her fetus was still inside of her that killed the baby, and then this abortion was completed. Now, that case, that story was a forced abortion out of China. But I bring it up to make this point that the abortion industry, even when they have tremendous latitude, they choose to not do partial birth abortions. They choose to do other abortion techniques. And so you write in your letter, let me quote from this on page 2. You say that partial birth abortion came into play to enable the abortionist to extend his practice into the late second trimester and into the third trimester. So you imply that until partial birth abortion came into existence, there were no abortions in the late second and third trimester, that enabled them to start doing those very late-term abortions. And then you say, now that tool has been removed. Will it result in the saving of lives? You bet it will be. And you say there will be thousands more with time. In fact, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And you argue that because they can't do a partial birth abortion, now they're stuck without a procedure. And I'm wondering if you could take the testimony of Warren Hearn, who does these, and take our testimony that you could schedule today. You could hang up the phone from us, Dr. Stringfellow, and you could have one of your nurses call and schedule a late-term abortion at any facility around the country that does late-term abortions. And you will find out that they will schedule that for that baby to be killed. So yeah. doesn't that mean that your conclusion that these cannot happen now is wrong?
No, I never said they could never happen. I said there were other techniques by which this could be done.
Okay,
to me. I'll listen to you talk. Now, you
sure.
Listen to me talk for
Please
a little
do.
Bit, okay? These other methods you're talking about are technically difficult. It's not something every abortionist can do. It's dangerous. They carry a huge potential complication, and you've got to convince the patient you need to kill their baby first and then do it.
Women
certainly you can schedule these other abortions, but I can tell you the most reasonable tool for doing these things has been removed from the abortionist quiver.
Now,
so they just don't have that option anymore. Certainly they can do abortions
in
the late trimester, but it's much harder, and it's going to dramatically lower the thing. What you're telling me now, okay, I can't refute you. I'm going to make some phone calls myself and find out. But I suspect these people like Tiller and it wouldn't be Warren Hearns because he never did a partial birth abortion in his life.
Not only has he never done a partial birth abortion, no partial birth abortion has ever been published in a peer-reviewed journal by abortionists.
That's exactly right.
He has a hard time identifying late-term abortionists who will do partial birth abortions. The Supreme Court itself, in their ruling, they said, and I have the ruling right in front of me, they go through the different procedures for how abortions are performed. And then they get into the late-term abortions. And they say there are no statistics available for how many partial birth abortions are done. They talk about hysterotomies, they talk about D&E, but then they point out that if an abortionist truly wants to do an intact D&E, basically a partial birth abortion, they say, they recommend that he can give an injection that kills the fetus. That's on page 35 of their ruling, and that he would therefore be able to deliver the baby intact and not violate this law. I have in front of me quotes, the Supreme Court justices went through a number of different ways of killing late-term babies. And you and I could start reading through these excerpts from the ruling. I mean, it's gruesome because they actually describe these ways of killing these babies.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on this because I think this is really the genesis of how you people don't really understand this as well as you should. And you need to read the ruling a little more carefully, okay? And I'm quoting directly from the ruling. If a partial birth abortion is truly necessary in certain circumstances, and if you read the whole thing, it means...
You're quoting from Section 4, Part B.
That's right. In other words, to save the life of the mother, okay? If...
Well, that's not what they mean, but go ahead.
Listen to me. If there's a necessity to do that, and partial birth abortion is the only way to do that. In that case, then they can kill the fetus using digitalis or potassium chloride and proceed. Okay, that's a big...
They mentioned digoxin.
Okay. All right. Now, that is in there very clearly so that if it's not for the life of the mother, they cannot do that.
Well, Dr. Stringfellow... Once again, you are completely wrong. I have read this ruling line by line. You have just, I believe you made an accident, but you just misrepresented page 35 of the ruling, and we link to the ruling. We'll put this excerpt on the show with our summary today on our website. That is not true. First of all, if it was limited to save the life of the mother, it would still be killing the baby, but it's not true. They offer an injection that kills the fetus, not only on this page, but earlier throughout this ruling. That is one of the various ways they say you can kill that baby and not violate this ruling.
Okay, where on page 35 are you talking about?
Where I have the quote right in front of me. If the quote begins at the end of page 34. If the intact D&E procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, and they're not talking about life of the mother. That has, they mean if the abortionist determines it's necessary, it appears likely an injection that kills the fetus is an alternative under the act that allows the doctor to perform the procedure.
Yeah, but if you read the rest of the thing,
it's pretty clear
that if necessary is talking about the life of the mother.
That's not true at all, Dr. Stringfellow.
There's not a health exception, and that's one of the really good things about this ruling.
They deal with the life of the mother and health exceptions.
It is part of it.
Would you like us to take a couple minutes and pull up the ruling and talk through it?
Sure, that'd be fine.
Okay.
But let me tell you this.
Yeah.
If I were an abortionist, and if I read this the way I've read it, and if I read it the way the American College read it, I read their statements on this, American College of OBGYN, it would convince me that if I did that injection, simply to kill the baby so that I could do the abortion, if there wasn't a serious problem where the life of the mother was involved, that I would then be liable for penalties. And that's what makes
okay.
it so good. Now, listen to me.
Dr. Stringfellow.
Hear me out, and I'll listen to you again. And the reason that's so important is the penalties are really severe, huge fines. But more than that, if you're found guilty, you can go to jail for 2 years, and it's a felony, and you can lose your medical license. So I tell you, abortionists are going to be really careful about how they utilize this scenario. This is going to scare a lot of them away from doing partial birth abortions. And this is not going to be an excuse so they can just kill the baby and do them just like
always. Okay, now I could demonstrate to anyone who has even done a cursory read of this opinion that you're wrong. Throughout the opinion, they reiterate that this only bans the abortion of a fetus while it is alive as it is being delivered from the mother.
That's correct. And they kill it if it's under very unusual circumstances.
And so they state that if the baby is dead, they state it clearly and repeatedly through the ruling, if the baby is dead before it is removed from the mother, then there is no violation of this ruling. And that is specifically stated right here on page 34. This is in section 4 of the ruling.
Yeah, I'm fully aware of that.
Subsection
B.
Let me read it to you. The conclusion that the act does not impose an undue burden on the right to abortion is supported by other considerations. So they're saying that this regulation does not impose an undue burden on the right to have an abortion. Alternatives are available to the prohibited procedure.
That's right.
As we have noted, the act does not prescribe D&E. Okay, and then they talk about that for a bit.
There.
Then they say, in addition, the act's prohibition only applies to the delivery of a living fetus.
That's
if the
right.
intact
that covers
DNA...
That covers circumstance where a baby has died in utero, whether it be from natural causes or what, and then a partial birth abortion could be performed.
Then they say, if the intact DNA procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, and by that, in this context, they mean if the abortionist determines he really needs to do an intact DNA, they talk about the difficulty of ripping the baby in parts, and they say some abortionists prefer to take the baby out in one piece. It takes less time. It's less difficult. So they say, if the intact DNA procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, it appears likely... Let me break into my own broadcast. Hi, this is Bob Enyart. I hope you are enjoying this program. If you are, tune in tomorrow for the conclusion right here on Bob Enyart Live.